Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm and author of Investing Simplified, the book. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial show in America, with a financial advisor, an estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free, and is broadcast live from Portland, Oregon on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck with a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com. Or you can call him right now at 503-417-9595. That's 503-417-9595. Or for our long distance and podcast listeners, you can call toll free at 877-733-1011. That's 877-733-1011. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
Well, good morning, Pacific Northwest, and especially Portland, Oregon, where the rain is back, and all ducks and beavers are welcome. And speaking of that, in studio with me is Carl Jepson, with the Carl Jepson Attorney at Law.
Yes, a former duck, I guess you might say.
Yeah, well, always, once a duck, always a duck,
yes.
And Kevin Stickey with the Baker Colson CPA firm.
Good morning, gentlemen.
So we're all in the house today, so here's the thing, folks. Pick up the phone, give us a call. We're here to answer your questions. Unlike all the other shows that have a conversation that's only a one-way conversation, they're talking, you're listening, we do just the opposite. We give you the opportunity to ask the question. We give you the opportunity to say what we're talking about for the day. Pick up the phone, 503-417-9595, toll free, 877-733-1011. This is your opportunity to ask the question that's keeping you up at night. And if you don't ask it, you know, you got nobody to blame but yourself. So this is your opportunity. Nobody will know who you are. Just 100,000 other listeners on the radio at the same time you are. But nobody will know who you are. So you don't even have to use your real name. You can use a fake name. Can you believe that? Huh? So pick up the phone. Give us a call. We want your questions. Your questions are what makes this show go. What makes this show different than other shows on the radio. Well, I gotta jump right into the market, because anybody who's in the stock market had one heck of a roller coaster ride so far for the start of the year. I mean, we have went from zero to double digit returns to negative returns back to a positive return. As the dust settles, as of yesterday when the market closed, the S&P was up 2.19% year to date. Now, if you really think about it, we're into February, 2 months in. Okay, if we're up 2.19, do a little simple math. That's a 12% return for the year. That ain't bad. That's not bad. And you take a look at the Dow Jones. Dow Jones is up 2.02 as of this Saturday, or as of yesterday. So where's that put us? Well, here's where it puts us, at about a 12% return on the Dow Jones. Those are some pretty solid numbers, folks, much higher than they've been for the last, I hate to say it, but for the last 17 years. And if you really take a look at the last 17 years where the markets have been, they haven't. You know, we take a look at the Dow Jones, if we go back to 12/31/99, the day the stock market died, or the day the music died, Don McLean, if you remember that song.
I drove my Chevy to the levee.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. That was the one.
Yeah.
Yep. And I always talk about that I think we went to a world economy, which totally changed our S&P and our Dow Jones. And, you know, you take a look at over that period of time, the Dow Jones, over that 17 years and 1.5 months, the Dow Jones is up 6.96%. I got to tell you, that's historically about 20% lower than its average the 60 years before. Same is true with the S&P. So when you think about those numbers, you say, wait a minute, why was the market not doing as well? Well, we didn't have a very good economy. And I think the economy is running on all gears right now, and all those people who have gotten bonuses got to be pretty happy. If we go back and look at the S&P for the last 17 years and 1.75 months, it's up 5.01%. And what about the NASDAQ? The NASDAQ should be the growth, right? Those are the aggressive growth stocks. They should be kicking the crap out of everybody. They're in last place. They're only up for the last 17 years, 1.5 months. They're up 4.54%. That is what you call an upside down market.
So what do you think's causing some of this volatility? I read a headline that just made me laugh. I think it was yesterday. It says, market stalls due to Mueller report. And I'm just laughing. It's just like, come on. Something's happening with the Russian collusion. Is that news to us all here or not?
I think it's pretty well cooked into the books that we're going to have some raises of interest rates. We've had historically very, very low interest rates. And the Fed has tried to control the dollar and the rate of return. And, you know, I think they're going to loosen that up a little bit. In kind of a real perfect world, what you'd like to have is interest rates be somewhere between 5 and 7% for home mortgages. That's about 5 to 7.5%. Money at the bank, you know, 3 to 4%. So you can get a little decent return, but, you know, you're not going to get like stock market. And have your stock market doing 8 to 10%. Because you take a risk, you got to get a higher reward. No risk, you go to the bank, get 3%, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, lately, if you go to the bank, you get 20 basis points. You know, or if you're really lucky and you tie your money up, you get 1%. Well, inflation, even in the worst of times, inflation still runs about 1%. So if you get 1% at the bank and that's where all your money is, you just break it even. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think there's nothing wrong with a little higher interest rates. I don't want them to get too high, but I think if they could get home mortgage loans somewhere between that 5.5% and 7.5%, that's a very doable market. Have interest rates 3 to 5% at the bank. Have the stock market doing 8 to 10%, so people are getting the risk reward for investing. I think we'd have a going economy. In fact, some people are predicting GDP is going to be over 4% this year. And it hasn't done that for a long, long time.
Exactly.
I was just going to say that. I haven't heard 4% mentioned for a long time. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because the new normal, the last 8 years was if we hit 2%, we're doing good. Well, not really. And most Americans, most younger Americans have never lived in an economy with a 3% or better GDP. So they've never seen it. They've never, ever seen those kind of numbers. So I'm hoping they'll get a chance to see it.
Well, in a time of inflation, Chuck, what would be what are some different kinds of investments or stocks that do better in times of higher inflation than others? While you're thinking on that, you know, Social Security recipients, they're going to get a higher cost of living, so that's going to be good. But
how much of that are they really going to get? The way the government calculates inflation has not really been supportive of Social Security.
No, it hasn't. I think it was, 2% from 17 into 18. So that's a pretty minor. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, I think most people, when you go into the markets, you still need to be highly diversified. You need to spread your risk out. And I am totally for active management versus passive management. And I think anybody who's retired, I listened to several other shows on the air, and I can tell you one thing, more and more people are moving to active management versus passive management. In fact, I think you're going to see over the next 10 to 15 years, I think many of the mutual fund companies are going to go to ETFs instead of mutual funds because the costs are lower. They're traded like a stock. They really are more receptive to the market than a mutual fund that settles at the end of the day. So I think you're going to see more and more of those, and more of them are already offering ETFs. You know, who would ever thought Vanguard offers them, Fidelity offers them, everybody's offering them now. Why? Because of lower costs.
I've been watching the Olympics. I'm gonna offer a little suggestion here, a comparison. And we were watching the big ski things, and there's big slaloms and the Super G and downhill and who knows whatever. And I said to myself, they ought to have somebody tell us what's the difference where those leaks were. And so, you know, because and then I noticed it on the skating ones. They got this one guy. He says, well, this is what the rules are. This is how that works. And this is why there's a little yellow light on the screen. Well, that's what you should do with ETFs. You should say, what are they?
Well, they're exchange-traded funds. What they are is they're like a mutual fund where you may have like 250 stocks in them. But the difference is a mutual fund closes at the end of the day, okay? The ETF is trades like a stock. You could trade it at 9 o'clock in the morning. You can get out of it. You can sell it. So that is the big difference. And for a receptive to actively manage, that is a distinct advantage instead of selling your portfolio and have it close at the end of the day. You know, like that the day the market dropped 1,100 points, mm-hmm. if you could have got out at 9 o'clock in the morning, you'd have been a happy camper. But having to wait till 4 o'clock in the afternoon mm-hmm. wasn't really that good.
Ah.
So that's one of the reasons. So ETFs are becoming more and more popular. Well, listen, I'm going to take a quick break, come back and talk to Carl's comments. And I want to mention, we got everybody in the studio. Kevin's here. We're going to talk about taxes. We're going to talk about estate planning. And afterwards, I'm going to answer a bunch of emails because I've got a bunch of emails here for all of us to answer that I've just noticed I got on our email. So we're going to go to the email log in the last segment of the show. But pick up the phone and call us if you got a question. There is no foolish question when it comes to your money, your estate plan, or your taxes. 503-417-9595. Toll free, 877-733-1011. We'll be right back.
Price Financial Group, wealth management.
Hello, my name is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney and co-host of the long-running radio talk show, Investing Simplified. My law practice emphasizes estate planning and probate. My mission statement is practical estate planning for peace of mind. This means that I listen carefully to my clients. I explain the various estate planning techniques and documents in the most understandable terms that I can. I try to make sure that my clients are comfortable with what we are doing together before proceeding, and I discuss my fees up front so that clients don't get any unwanted surprise. Estate planning and probate don't have to be that complicated. My experienced staff and I work closely with our clients to guide them through both of these matters in the simplest and most efficient manner possible. My office is located in the White Office Building at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 101, right across the street from Mall 205. My telephone number is 971-229-0585, and my website is carljepsenlaw.com.
Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl now at 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's Carl Jepsen.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepsen, and I'm going to talk about undue influence today. I'm not being indicted for anything. That's not that kind of undue influence. But we have a caller, and I think it's Ernesto. Are you on the line? Hello?
Yes.
Yes, sir. You have a call for Chuck.
This is Ernesto, my real fake name.
Oh, I like it. I like it. That's great.
Chuck, was a question for Chuck. You just mentioned active versus passive portfolio management, and I know in the past you mentioned that, well, doing it actively is like having stop losses on stocks or that sort of thing. So if the market unexpectedly drops, your clients are automatically getting bailed out without losing hardly anything. But I also understand I'm wondering, do you have everything in your clients' portfolios in stocks, because you can't put stop losses, if I recall correctly, on mutual funds, unless they're exchange traded funds or bonds or things like that? Or do you have some sort of a fancy computer program that bails them out or alerts you, and then you've got to call them when you're doing active management?
You stated that correctly at the end. We have a fancy computer system that has built in times when we're going to go to cash, get out of the market. I'm so glad you called and asked this question, because this is really a fundamental difference in how people invest their money. When you're young, a mutual fund, which I consider a passive investment, is a great investment in your 401k because you can dollar cost average into it. That is super. The problem is mutual funds are passive. They cannot go 100% to cash and get out of their own way. When the market goes down, mutual funds, by law, by prospectus, and if you read their prospectuses, most of them have to stay 90% invested in the market. Well, if the market starts crashing and you've got to stay 90% of your portfolio in the market, guess where you're going? You're going down. We think a better way, particularly when you're close to retirement or in retirement, is to have actively managed programs with programs in them that not necessarily are stop losses, but are strategies in the market to protect the downside risk of your portfolio. And that you do through diversification and also other strategies. But the fact is, you don't want to get in a situation where your portfolio can go down. And most people, if most people are honest with themselves, go back and look at your 2000 statement, then look at your 2003 statement. It's not pretty. Go back and look at your 2007 and 8 statement. It's not very pretty. Most people didn't recover in 2000 when the tech bubble popped on March 15th of 2000. And I hear on the news every day guys say it happened in 2001. They don't even know history. And there are news people on TV saying on the Business Financial Network, it just almost makes me want to gag. They don't even know the numbers themselves. You know, they're getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to be on TV, and they don't even give correct information to the listeners. But anyway, I digress. Okay, so here's the thing. You go back and look at that, and if you can't see that active is better than passive right there, there's no other way. And I show this to people every day in my office. I show them the difference between active and passive management. And if you're retired, you don't want to be in mutual funds. I'm just telling you, you don't want to be in mutual funds. And I can show you, I can run all the costs and the numbers for you, and I'll show you. And I'll actually show you your mutual fund. You come into my office, I'll put it on the computer, and I'll show you your mutual fund, what it really did. And in fact, a lot of times when I meet with people, I'll say, show me your best mutual fund. They're really proud of their mutual fund until I show them what it really did.
And then can I ask you too then, say you've got a stop loss or the market starts dropping and you've got a computer program that gets them out, how do you know when to get them back in again? Is it experience, or is there another?
No, it's again. It's, you know, here's the thing. Here's what most people don't want to know. 85% of all trades in America are done by computers. 85% of all trading. Mm-hmm. We have in our programs, we have a copyrighted trading program that not everybody has, but we have it with our managed portfolios. And that computer-generated program actually tells us when to get in, when to get out, and move the money.
Wow. It's very,
that's why we use active portfolios. We go to 100% cash. Sometime we're right, sometime we're wrong. I mean, in 15, we went to cash. We were wrong, and we didn't lose any money, but we didn't make any money either. But the fact is, we did go to cash because the strategy worked. We got out of the way of a potential bubble, and that's what you want to do. You know, we had 1.2% fluctuation for the month of January versus 12 to 14.
Well,
so a lot of volatility there. We didn't have much volatility, and that's what we try to do, is we try to avoid the volatility, because most of our clients are either just about ready to retire or are retired. I mean, I got clients who are 100 years old who, one particular client I can think of right now has been with me about 45 years. she's got more money now than she had when she retired. And her comment to me was, if I'd known I was going to have this much money, I'd had a hell of a lot more fun. And she's probably right, you know. But that's because we had a strategy that has worked over a long period of time.
All right. All right. Thanks very much.
You bet. Thanks. Ernesto, good call. And keep that fake name. I like it. It's good.
Yes. Yeah,
okay. Okay. We're going to get back to Carl. Carl's comments.
Well, last week, for those who were, you know, had the fortitude to get up on a Saturday morning, we talked about testamentary capacity. In other words, the legal ability, the legal competence to make a will. And, you know, we talked about several different things. Number one, what they had to know, essentially, in order to be determined to be competent. And they had to basically know the nature and extent of their property. They had to know what a will is. They had to know, you know, who their likely beneficiaries were. Usually that means their kids. Sometimes that's something different, but usually it means their kids and who they are. And then it also needs to know what the will actually says. They need to understand that this will says who gets what. So those are kind of the basic elements of being testamentary, having testamentary capacity. And a lack of testamentary capacity is one of the most common theories upon which a contestant contests the will. So the most other common way of contesting a will is what we call undue influence. And it's kind of a fact-driven, circumstance-driven kind of legal theory that says if a person is wrongfully induced by the conduct of another for, you know, the purpose of changing the will, or essentially the person who's making the will looks like his will, but in fact it was produced because of the will of another. And so, and you might wonder, well, so what does all that mean? And when they get right down to it, they talk about some elements that they look at, and they don't, none of them are dispositive of the issue, but they are elements or factors that are to be considered in determining whether this will was a product of the free will of the individual or whether it was unduly influenced. But what I'm talking about, usually we talk about the symptoms or the, you know, kind of the, you know, sometimes, you know, you have a disease and you get a rash and kind of things. Well, that's kind of what undue influence has, some symptoms to it. And some of the most common ones, I think, are that you have first of all, you have a situation where the person makes disingenuous or unrealistic promises. I'm going to stay here in your home and protect you forever. And then sometimes they have the kind of the converse of that is the threat to leave. If you're not nice to me, I'm going to leave. Nobody else loves you. Okay, think about this, folks. This is silly. You know, it sounds silly, but you know there are variations of those statements that exist in many, many places. So sometimes, you know, it's just a family dynamic that is sad. So there's also isolation from other family members. You know. Uncle Tilly moves into Grandma's house, and all of a sudden, nobody gets a phone call back from Mom. And if they do, she says, "Oh, I'm busy," or worse yet, Uncle Tilly comes up and says, "She can't talk to you right now," or "She's in bed," or "She's going to the well," you know. Anyway, so, and you never get a hold of her. And then, you know, all of a sudden there are no family dinners and there's, you know, she used to call you three times a day. Now she doesn't call you at all. So those are kind of things that are sort of a symptom of what we might call the undue influencer. Another thing is basically a disparagement of the other family members. "Oh, you know, that son of yours, he doesn't ever do anything. He's never around here. He's never, he shouldn't get anything." I mean, those are the kind of statements that are made. By the way, a lot of these kind of statements get to the point where they're so bad, you know, they're kind of like browbeating and threatening and duress and all that stuff, that they're actually financial elder abuse, at which time that's a different thing. But more often than not, it's kind of this subtle, constant, you know, nagging and browbeating that takes place. And then the next thing you know is, you know, Mom, Dad, or whoever it is, ends up getting driven down to a lawyer they'd never heard of, and the lawyer doesn't know. And hopefully, if they have capacity, they now have been convinced that this is what they want to do. I want to give all of my stuff to Uncle Tilly. Well, you know, that may or may not be undue influence, but those are the kind of things that we're looking at. So the factors, there are seven factors that the court looks at in determining whether or not undue influence took place. First of all, was the testator involved in the procurement of the will? In other words, whose idea was it, and did they actually participate in the you know, creation of the will? Obviously, that involves a certain assessment of whether or not they have testamentary capacity. Did they get independent advice? In other words, did they go to a lawyer that, you know, they're okay with, not, you know, some lawyer that's not their lawyer? And then there's a secrecy and haste. You know, in other words, did Uncle Tilly move in and then the next day drive her down to the lawyer? And then there's also the secrecy part of it, which is never, ever tell her that you even made a will. You know, don't tell anybody that you made a will. Certainly don't tell her that you made the will to give everything to me. That'll just cause you trouble. They'll come in here and they'll yell at you. So don't do that. You know. So anyway, there's secrecy and haste. And then there's an obvious change in the attitude of the testator, the person who's going to make the will, following the close association with this beneficiary who is conducting the undue influence. And then there's also changing the natural disposition of what you would expect. You know, ordinarily people, without some other well-known circumstances, is inclined to give stuff to their kids, not to, you know, somebody who's, you know, Paul the pool boy or Candy the caregiver or, you know, or Uncle Tilly. So then there's number six is unnatural gifts. In other words, that's the same kind of thing, which is, do I give this to, do I give this to the person that's just, you know, my next door neighbor who, you know, walked my dog one day and said I should give him my house? You know, that happens kind of thing. And then also the one that often becomes the most obvious, I think, is the susceptibility to influence. Is this person isolated? Are they alone? Are they depressed? Are they ill? Or do they have some kind of physical ailment or disability that is making it much easier to make them feel that they've got to do this? And, you know, that sort of thing. And have they now become dependent? What degree of dependency do they have on the person that they're, who's exercising this undue influence? And unfortunately, there's kind of a gray area because there are a lot of really, I don't want to sound like everybody's a crook, but there are a lot of wonderful family members, caregivers who essentially give up their life for the purpose of taking care of mom or dad. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about the people who do it with a clear, if not plan, at least a motivation to benefit themselves more than they have to take care of mom.
Well, you know, Carl, as I tell people who come in and talk to us, look, you need to do your own due diligence and homework on things like this, because there is a percentage of the population, and I don't know what the number is, maybe 10%, maybe less, maybe more, I don't know. But there's a percent of the people that are dishonest, that do go out for personal gain on things like this. And that's just a fact of life. If you bury your head in the sand and say, oh, no, that isn't out there, well, I got news for you. You're going to be a victim. So you need to be your own advocate. You need to be your own best resource for checking things out.
And the age-old defense that is, well, mom wanted me to have it, is a pretty weak defense. So
yeah, pretty,
you know,
poor.
You know, wanted me to have it after, you know, we locked her in a, you know, bedroom for a week, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And, you know, the hard thing about that is, Carl, you and I know of one particular situation where one family member used a lot of assets from a family. And it's very hard to go back if you're the siblings of that person and say, oh, we're going to prosecute them, even though they basically stole the money. You have to reach reality that this person is not trustworthy. And even though they may be a relative, they're just not trustworthy.
And a lot of times I think most people know it in advance, but they don't want to really believe it. Sometimes because of the life circumstances of the various siblings, it's more convenient for the potential abuser, if you will, to move in with grandma or to take over the affairs of grandma than it is for the other family members. So they say in their mind, well, gosh, we're busy people. We don't have time to take care of grandma. And if he's willing to do it, he'll be honest enough. I guess he will. We'll let him do it. Maybe that's not a good idea. If you have that thought, maybe you ought to say, well, maybe we ought to think about a professional fiduciary for this person.
Well, speaking about a professional fiduciary, we're going to be right back with the tax investigator who's honored us to come in the studio during tax season. So keep listening because we're going to talk to the tax investigator and find out what is going on with taxes. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified. Pick up the phone, give us a call, 503-417-9595. 877-733-1011. And for you guys last week who were listening to the show that Carl and I couldn't answer some of your tax questions, we got Kevin here to do it. So give us a call.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask Kevin Stege, CPA and shareholder of the Baker Coulson CPA firm, that tax question that's been keeping you up at night. You can call Kevin 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the CPA with the tax answers, Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and it's good to be back in studio with you fine gentlemen. I always learn something when I hear Carl's comments, well, and Chuck's investing segment too. Today, we're going to cover a lot of stuff here real quick, so I'll just get right into it. I know we've got some questions there, Chuck. But first off, latest update on taxes is February 9th, the budget bill got passed. You probably all saw that. Most folks do not know that in that there was over 40 tax provisions that were addressed. December 31st, 2016, many, many provisions sunsetted. Standard provisions, things that you probably took advantage of relating to education, relating to energy credits, relating to potentially your mortgage. So those things all expired. It was not until February 9th that they extended them. Many tax programs are not calculating those at this point yet. I talked with one client who we do their business, but he does his own on TurboTax. His was calculating it on TurboTax. Our tax program, which is from the same underlying company as TurboTax, but is about a million times more expensive, they had all the provisions in there, but because it was not law, the forms aren't even out from the IRS officially approved. So just be careful, and I'm going to go over some of the key extenders that got extended, these are some of the main ones that affect people. First one is the discharge of your qualified principal residence indebtedness. So if you went into foreclosure on your home and that got the mortgage got discharged, normally that's taxable income. You have forgiveness of debt. Well, there's a provision that says no, not if you follow certain things and report it a certain way, that's not taxable income. So that got extended for one more year. Another thing is the mortgage insurance premiums. You go and get your FHA loan and you have to pay mortgage insurance because you're only putting 3% down. That is again deductible when you pay those premiums. It's deductible as mortgage interest, basically. So that's good for one more year. So, you know, if you're looking at going into bankruptcy, maybe or that home is going to go into foreclosure, maybe do it in 2017. If you're going to refi that FHA loan, maybe do that in 2017, because 2018, these may not be around. And I have no feel one way or the other. You know how Congress is. So here's a big one related to education. The qualified tuition and fees deduction. When you don't take your education expenses as a credit, you may have a better advantage taking it as a deduction, and you kind of look at the better way. Well, that deduction wasn't extended. Well, now it is. So make sure that you consider that in your mix. Here's another interesting one. Here's the mine rescue team training credit. Now this is mines like a coal mine. I didn't say mime like what Carl does to try to throw me off my segment when I'm talking. Yeah, exactly. All right, we'll move on. But that is an extension. But anyway,
I thought that was like the Hare Krishna or whatever. Hey, right. Listen, Kevin, we got a caller on the line. He's got a question for you, and this looks like a good question. I know the answer, but Bob from Forest Grove has a question. Gave two cars to his sons. Can he write it off? Are you there, Bob? Are you there? Bob.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I have two sons, and I gave them each money towards vehicles this year. One was $27,000, the other was $23,000. How much of it can I write off?
Oh, well, unfortunately, I don't think there's any provision to help you on your taxes on that. I'm sure your sons are appreciative, but I can't think of anything that you can take advantage of.
Well, there is one thing he could take advantage of. He could consider that as a gift. And if he has an estate tax, like in Oregon, he has over $1 million estate tax, he could give that as a gift and lower your estate tax.
Yeah, so, I mean, it reduces, reduces the size of your estate by the $27,000 and $23,000. So that's something if you're, of course... Obviously, the problem with that is that gaining the advantage, honestly, is the estate planning part of it is that the people who are alive get the benefit of your reducing your estate.
Yeah, it's not you.
So I mean, there's a it's kind of a like kissing your sister, I guess. But anyway, you could file a gift tax because that tax return. In fact, technically, I suppose you're supposed to, and it's not that big a deal, as I understand it. My tax girl is nodding yes. That's not a big deal, and so if an estate over $1 million is possible, then you ought to have maybe do that, and then it will at least have some impact.
Are we talking about a taxable estate of $1 million?
Yeah. Well, actually. Yeah, that's when Oregon gives you $1 million tax free. Federal government gives you like what 11 point something or other a million tax free. So, and the gift tax part of it comes over $14,000 a year comes out of the
gift exclusion.
The $11 million. So,
yeah.
So if you gave so on the gifts that you made, you'd roughly have $10 million each that was taxable. But not really, and you take that $20,000, 10 for each loan or gift, and you would reduce your $11 million exemption amount by that amount. So it's not a big deal. It's not going to help you out that much.
But if you're over $1 million in Oregon, it would help.
Yeah. If you were right.
All righty. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob. Good call.
Bye.
We got Lee. He's got a question about tax form question. Lee, are you there?
Yes, very quick question for Kevin, and then I'll jump off the line. Those of us who, I have a very simple tax return and have never bought or once upon a time got TurboTax or something like that. And we used to get mailed the federal and state tax forms in our mailbox, and then that disappeared. And then you could pick them up at the library, and that disappeared. And for the last few years, I've been downloading them off the net, and I tried to download the 2006. The 1040 for last year, and it says it's under draft or something like that, and you can't use it. So is there something going on where there's a delay in us accessing downloads to 2017 tax forms? I know that the new tax code goes to 2018, so
yeah.
Please enlighten us, and I'll hang up and take your answer off the air. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Lee. Some forms are still in draft, particularly ones that are related to this extension that just happened on February 9th. Your 1040 form should be available, I would think, although maybe they are tweaking that now again because of these extensions that they just passed. We're able to print fully operational 1040s out of our program, which is approved by the IRS. So I would think they would have an operational 1040 and that you could print. But yeah, it's getting more and more difficult to get paper forms. They're really pushing people to e-file. If push comes to shove, you can always call our office and we can let you know the latest form to be able to obtain.
You know, Kevin, speaking about that, the latest form, and I've seen a couple of different news stories, and since I don't do taxes and you do, I got to ask you this. I saw the head of the IRS say that they were going to go ahead and give people that tax bill for ones who didn't have insurance when the government had said before they were not going to penalize anybody for 2017. So what's the final?
Well, they didn't say they wouldn't penalize them. They said they would process returns that were silent, whether they were subject to the penalty or not. So if you just didn't mark the box that said you had health insurance, which would indicate maybe you didn't, if you just didn't do anything, they would still process your return and give you the refund, but they reserve the right to go back and issue a penalty, and I believe they may have started doing that. So you do have to pay the penalty for 2017, and you do have to have insurance for 2018, or you'll pay a penalty for 2018 also. 2019, you don't have to have the insurance. So that's how.
So they phase that in over 3 years.
Yeah, it'll phase out at the end of 2018. Yeah. The mandate to have insurance and the penalty related to it. So, okay, moving on. This is a kind of a big extension provision, and it affects our small businesses and a lot around the Portland and Pacific Northwest for our small film producers and our film industry segment of people. Huge provision that basically says if your film is expected to net under $15 million, or gross, I should say, $15 million, you can make an election that says, when I expend money on my film, I'm just going to currently expense it as a deduction. Instead of, typically, when you make a large production like this, you have to capitalize all these costs into the film, and then as you sell, you get to deduct those costs and what have you. So for all of our small film producers out there, this is extended for one more year. There's a lot of specialty rules that surround it to make sure you dot your I's and cross your T's. But if you do, that may be very beneficial.
Wow, that's going to be beneficial to independent filmmakers who do these little shows.
It is. Yeah. That's exactly right. So it's good for one more year. One of the little provisions is you have to start... what's the terminology? I don't know the film terminology. You have to start production, start shooting the film basically in 2017, and that lets you continue to do that, I believe, make those expensing elections for the life of that film. But anyway, that's a kind of a key thing. Okay.
Hey, we got one more question here, Kevin. Gerald's got a question about paying off a house. Are you there?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, hey, this is the deal. I owe my house worth about $750,000, and I owe about $221,000 on it, and I'm debating whether to pay the house off and have it mine tax-free, but I don't know what the consequences of doing something like that is. And
are you retired or working?
Yeah, I'm 62, so I'm kind of semi-working, I'm getting a little bit of money from a business I own. Not much, about $36,000 a year. And so I don't know. I've heard it's a good idea to just go debt free, but I don't know if that's.
Well, how much is your mortgage payment?
$2,000 a month.
Okay, so $24,000. That's about 80% of your income. You're not taking Social Security or anything else?
No. I pay myself bonuses once in a while, $10,000, $12,000 bucks, but I can usually live on what I make.
What's your interest rate you're paying on that mortgage?
About 4.75.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Do you have the capital to pay it off?
Yeah, I have the capital to pay it off.
Okay.
I got about $600,000 in the market, and I got about $250,000 in cash.
Okay, let me just point this out to you, because unless you're taking the income off your investments to live on, and it sounds like if you got livable income of about 36 to 50, and your mortgage payment is $24,000, that's at least 40 to 50% of your income. And here's the thing: if you had that $215,000 in an account that was paying you 5%, that would only give you $10,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I would tell you to pay that off, particularly at your age and the time. You haven't started taking Social Security yet, have you?
No.
Okay. I would tell you to pay that off, because the amount of money you have to have available to make that payment is way higher than the balance to pay it off. You got a $215,000 mortgage that's costing you $24,000 a year. That's almost 12%. I'd be paying that sucker off.
And it doesn't sound like you're in a high tax bracket where the interest deduction is buying you that much. And especially in 2018, you'll probably potentially, well, yeah. Anyway,
you're not going to have much of a write-off at all.
Well, that's what I was thinking, because you do get a little bit of a write-off, but what you're saying is my write-off is going to be pretty minimum, right?
Yeah, and the the money you have in the bank is probably earning a whole 20 basis points, and you're paying 5% on your, or 4% on your mortgage, and you're making 20 basis points on your savings. It just doesn't make sense.
Okay, guys. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you bet. Good question, Joe. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we're going to open up the phone lines. And if you got a question, pick up the phone. Give us a call, 503-417-9595. Toll-free, 877-733-1011. We're the show that answers questions live on the air. We'll be right back.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management. Financial Group, Wealth Management.
Navigating through today's financial investment world can seem pretty scary. Now, here's the good news. Chuck Price, president of Price Financial Group Wealth Management, introduces a new revolutionary concept that will change how you invest now and in the future. It's called Asset Lock. Asset Lock monitors your investment accounts 24/7, 365, and alerts you when action needs to be taken. You know, they don't call Chuck Price the financial doctor for nothing. And now, Chuck Price offers Asset Lock. At Price Financial Group Wealth Management, we believe all our clients deserve to have Asset Lock monitoring their accounts. So call Chuck today or online at pfgwm.com and learn how you can get Asset Lock on your accounts today for free. Price Financial Group Wealth Management, because the smart investor knows what you don't know can hurt you.
Simplified.
Call 503-3000. That's 503-3000.
Investments, tax questions, or legal concerns? Get them all answered now for free. Call Chuck, Kevin, or Carl for your answers. Call 503-417-9595 or toll free at 877-733-1011. Now, here's the Knowledge Trust.
All right, welcome back to Investing Simplified, and I'm going to finish up two more provisions. The first one that got extended is the extension of credit for non-business energy property, which is 10% of your windows, skylights, doors, that sort of thing on your principal residence. A lot of people take advantage of that crazy couple hundred dollar credit, but hey, if it's there, take it. And then I think the last one here that really affects a lot of people, or some people, is the extension for the alternative fuel vehicle refueling property. In other words, electric car charging stations, 30% credit on that. That's extended for one more year. So if you're thinking about putting an electric car charging station in your home, 2017 would be the year to do it. It may not be around for 2018, and that's a 30% credit. And so you're talking, $7,000-$10,000 of installation costs. 30% of that back is makes the project doable. And that's the Tax Investigator for today.
Okay. Well, listen, we're gonna go to our email bank. It's got a few little email questions that people did, and one sent this in on the radio show, InvestingSimplifiedRadio.com. You can go on there and interact with us as well. Kevin, this is a good one for you and me. Does the new tax bill give favorable tax treatment to real estate gains? If yes, could this be a factor in the stock market recent correction?
Well, I'll take the first part of that. I'll let you have the second. The first part, capital gains have not changed. They are at historically very good rates. There's even 0% available for a lot of capital gain. And so that hasn't changed from a tax perspective. Whether real estate income from an active trade or business, that maybe got a little bit of a break, but that's not capital gains.
Yeah, and I don't think real estate had a thing to do with this. However, I will preface this. I do believe that sometime between now and 2020, we're going to have another major correction in the market. I think we're going to have a correction not only in the stock market, but I believe also in the real estate market, and basically because of demographics. And I think stock market's going to have a 7 to 9 year recovery. Real estate's going to have a much longer recovery. So if you think about that, just keep in mind, if you're in the house you want to be in the rest of your life, probably a good thing to hang on to. Here's another question. Gentleman writes in, Kevin, I'm close to retirement and I'm looking at advice what to do with my single employer 401k. I want a stream of income that will provide income in my retirement. What is the best move? Well, I guess maybe that's my bag.
That's yours. Yeah. That is.
But here's what I would recommend. I would recommend you give me more information, because basically just telling me that little bit, I don't know your age. I don't know how much assets you have. I don't know what your situation is on your home. Just like the gentleman we talked to earlier, if you have a mortgage payment that's way out of whack to your income, and you have savings, there's an advantage to pay it off. So there's a lot of things I would have to talk to you. And I sent you an email back and said, if you want to call my office, I'll have my assistant set up a 30-minute phone conversation. You can ask me all the questions. I can get information from you, tell you what I recommend. No obligation to you. 30-minute free phone call. Can't beat that. But I would need the facts. Without the facts, I'd be giving you a recommendation that wouldn't mean a lot. So...
devil's in the details.
Devil's in the details, particularly when it comes to money. The money, taxes, and your estate planning, it is in the details. Because you do have to make provisions for what the unforeseen that might happen. I had another one here, too, about a gentleman write in. And this is a tricky question, Carl, because this has to do with legalities. It says, my mother remarried a few years ago. Her husband has a pension plan that has been collecting payments from several years. He has a deceased wife on the plan, and they said they won't let him change the beneficiary, even though he's been collecting on the plan. Can he roll it into an IRA? If something happens to him, he can will it to the mother, to my mother, or one or more of his children. He is 80, and I think he said the plan paid him a little over $1,700 a month. Also, is it a good idea to roll it over? There are complications there could be run into.
Well, that's okay. A lot of stuff.
Yeah,
what happened?
Yeah.
What happened with the first wife?
She evidently passed away.
She passed away.
Yeah.
Well, he could have taken the pension option where each plan it depends.
He could have did it on a joint life basis.
Exactly.
And so since she's passed away, they have to maintain those numbers.
Yeah.
And you really need to call and check with that company. I will send you an email to this as a follow-up. There's a lot of other stuff we need to know. Real quick, how does somebody get a hold of you, Kevin?
We are at baker-colson.com, 503-666-5569.
CarlJepsonLaw.com, and it's 971-229-0585.
You can find me at pfgwm.com or 503-253-3000. God bless you all. God bless America, and have a great, safe weekend out there, and enjoy some time to relax.
Do Investing Simplified. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated. How often do you have a checkup? Annually? Only when you're not feeling your best? Or are you one who waits until there is an emergency condition? High blood pressure, rapid pulse, or sleepless nights could be the result of your investment portfolio or no estate plan. But there is a specialist ready to offer you a checkup on your financial health.
Hey, Gene, Dr. Price.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor and author of Investing Simplified, is offering you a free financial checkup. Whether you're asking for a second opinion, a complete financial physical, or investment stress test, Chuck Price, the financial doctor, can help diagnose your money ailments and prescribe a prudent path towards healthy investments and peace of mind. Call 503-253-3000 to schedule your financial checkup or on the web at pfgwm.com. That's pfgwm.com. You'll feel better.